all of us. Everyone at the State's Academic Medical Center. All working together to deliver complete care now and for generations to come. All over the state, including hospital and clinic locations from the Delta to the Gulf Coast. All for one reason. You, the University of Mississippi Medical Center. All for your health.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
The 10-Minute Timeout is a mini podcast that brings Mississippi sports stories to life. Join me, Lacey Alexander, as I learn more about the teams, athletes, staff, and programs that make our state proud. One-on-one interviews with influential playmakers paint a clear picture for listeners of how Mississippi sports inspire and energize our community. New episodes released every other Friday on your favorite podcasting app.
Good morning, and thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Southern Remedy, Healthy and Fit on MPB Think Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Josie Bidwell, Associate Professor of Preventive Medicine and Nurse Practitioner at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. And joining me today, I have Jessica Fons. She is a registered dietitian nutritionist, and she's been a dietitian for over 15 years with lots of different experience in lots of different settings, clinical, corporate, and private practice. And she's the owner of Sadie Well, LLC. And probably her most proud accomplishment is the fact that she's a mom of three kiddos. I know that that's important to her as well. And we're going to be sharing some information today about what I like to call no-nonsense nutrition. And that's a little bit of a tongue twister on a Monday morning, but it's a really important concept. And we really want to break down any misconceptions or any overcomplication of the application of good nutrition to your lifestyle. So good morning, Jessica.
Thank you, Dr. Bidwell, for having me today.
Oh, absolutely. It's my pleasure. I'm glad that you're able to join us on this day that's supposed to be an exciting day with an eclipse, but is a little overcast and rainy here in the metro. So I'm not sure we're going to see as many cool things as as my kids thought they were going to see when they left
right.
for school Thank today.
Thank you.
Yes. All right. Before we dive into that, tell me about Sadie Well, your company.
Yes, thank you for asking. So Sadie Well is an online nutrition counseling company. And so we're a team of three registered dietitians, and we offer nutrition counseling mostly with eating disorders and disordered eating or weight cycling or chronic dieting. But we do get a variety of different conditions, things like diabetes or GI concerns as well.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, it's super convenient because it's an online platform. So it's not limited to kind of being where you are. And so it's a good way for folks to get in contact with the nutrition experts, because that is what a registered dietitian is. Talk to us a little bit about what exactly an RDN is or does.
That's a great question. So we often confuse the words dietitian and nutritionist.
Yes.
Dietitian or registered dietitian, or a lot of people call it registered dietitian nutritionist.
Right.
Basically, we have to go through not only 4 to 6 years of college. Now, I think a master's degree is required, but you're required to have a master's degree, and we have to have supervised practice. So we have to work in a hospital, and we have to get in a lot of different settings where we're supervised. So it gives us kind of an extra credential to where we have a lot of experience. Nutritionist in many states is not a protected word,
right.
And really anybody could call themselves a nutritionist. In Mississippi, that's a little bit different. The word nutritionist is protected and to where only a dietitian can use that word. But in other states, that may not be the case. So we always encourage to seek a registered dietitian.
Absolutely. And it does not mean that folks that maybe have nutritionist as their focus are doing bad things. But the registered dietitian really has that advanced not only education, but also training to be able to apply nutritional principles in a variety of medical conditions. Because it's not only just good balanced nutrition for overall health, there are a lot of different things that can be going on with someone that may impact the types of foods they need to be eating, if they're on certain medications, if their kidneys are not doing well, if we're trying to heal a wound, all of those different things that are going to require specialized attention to balancing those nutritional needs, right?
Yes, absolutely. Because really, we all have to eat. So in some ways, we're all nutritionists,
right?
But you're exactly right. Registered dietitians have experience to kind of see the whole picture. Right. So we can kind of put different pieces of the puzzle together and kind of give a more comprehensive view and feedback, especially when you have some medical conditions going on. So, yes, you're exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky enough to have two registered dietitians with me in clinic, and people often ask, what's the difference in what you do and what they do? And I'm like, well, I'm going to give you more general application of nutrition. So you come in to see me with diabetes, I'm going to take a look at your diet and look at kind of the low-hanging things that we can remove or tweak. You know, maybe we're drinking a lot of soda or, we're eating out more than maybe we would like. And I'll work on some of those behaviors to address that. But if we've got, you know, multiple things we're trying to balance, then that's where my RDs are the stars of the show, because they're going to come in and do actual medical nutrition therapy where we apply those nutritional strategies to help treat your disease process. So I'm very lucky that I get to have two great ones on my team.
You are. Yes, you are. And really what you just said is exactly what we do at Sadie Well. I mean, anybody can talk about nutrition, you know, and is encouraged to, because again, it's a very important topic.
Yes.
But when things get a little bit more complicated, that's exactly what a dietitian do and what we do at Sadie Well. So yes.
Fantastic. Now, you mentioned a term that people may not be as familiar with when you were talking about what you guys do. You mentioned weight cycling. What is that?
Yes. That is another word for yo-yo dieting, which we probably have all heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so yo-yo dieting would be something, or weight cycling, where a person would lose a tremendous amount of weight and they may be on some type of crash diet or specialized diet. But unfortunately, we all know a lot of times these diets, sometimes when we stop them, we may gain the weight back.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times people will come to us and they feel like they have been chronically dieting, mm-hmm. or weight cycling, as we call it. And so they'll come to us, and you know, that can affect not only somebody physically, but also someone emotionally.
Oh,
so we will work
yes.
with the person in both of those arenas. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, what do you think drives kind of this chronic dieting, or why don't diets work?
That is such a great question, and I don't know if we have time to cover it all today, right?
We could do a whole show on why diets don't work. Yes.
Exactly. Exactly right. So I think really what you're asking is, like, why is this so complicated?
Right.
And it is so complicated. And I think there's several things, and I'll kind of give you maybe a bullet point of what I think may be. One, we live in a culture of just dieting overload, or another word that people may use is a very heavy diet culture.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere we look, there's a new diet or there's a new trend, and it can become quite confusing for people. So that's one reason that things become really complicated. I think another reason is we generally live in a very fast-paced world now, and usually we have, you know, dual working spouses. Both spouses work. Children they're in a lot of activities now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we just generally live in a fast-paced world, and it makes, you know, being healthy and dieting really complicated. And oftentimes we feel like we have to make a drastic lifestyle change because we live in this fast-paced world. And I think really two other reasons I'll add to it. One, we have to realize that nutrition research takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
It's like medical research. So it takes a lot of time for different approaches and things to be backed by science. So a lot of times what we hear in the media or we hear from people are personal experiences,
mm-hmm.
or things that they've tried that aren't necessarily backed by science yet. So there's a lot of confusion and complication between those two things. But I think lastly, and this is kind of where we work in the Sadie Well arena the most, is oftentimes food becomes complicated, and it serves more than just nourishment. It serves more than food, and food starts to become emotional. It starts to become something we do when we're lonely or
mm-hmm.
stressed or anxious. And so when we're happy, we eat. When we're sad, we eat. If we have a wedding or a funeral or a holiday, we eat. So it's a lot of kind of emotional part that can come into eating, which then again makes dieting and just eating in general very complicated. So there's a few reasons.
Yeah, there's many, many, many reasons. And that's why working with a provider who understands those things is really important, because it's not simply just here, eat this way, or here's a printout of a diet or any of those types of things that's going to lead to lasting success on a way of eating. Because the basis of kind of a balanced nutrition plan may not be that difficult, the application of it in our daily life can often be a very, very heavy lift for a variety of reasons, whether that be money or access or convenience or taste or habit or any of these different kinds of things. And it really does take kind of teasing down to what's leading us to eat the way that we do, or choose the things that we choose to eat, or not have a choice about some of the things that we choose to eat. But, one thing that I tend to try and focus on is a lack of restriction, because that's how diets kind of gain popularity. It's like, well, just stop eating X, Y, and Z, and all of the problems will go away. But we are not really built for that. Adults don't really care for that level of restriction in the long term. And really, there's not a food that can't fit in, a healthy dietary pattern, right?
100% agree with you. And I totally agree. People will come to me, they'll say, hey, Jessica, what's the best diet to be on? And I tell them over and over, the best diet is the one that you don't know that you are on.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, it should be easy. Not that it is. Again, the application is hard. But at the end of the day, there's no such thing as bad food.
Right.
And all food should be included. And you're right. Lack of restriction is really important, like you said. And I like that.
Yep. You're listening to Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit on MPB Think Radio. I'm your host, Josie Bidwell, nurse practitioner at UMMC. And joining me today is Jessica Fons. She is a registered dietitian with Sadie Well, LLC. And we are talking about no-nonsense nutrition and really how we start to apply some nutritional strategies into our daily lives without all the added stress and confusion. Now, Jessica, before the break, we were kind of talking about building a healthy pattern is about making sure that all foods can fit. But you also did a really nice job of kind of summing up that we don't just eat because we're hungry. We eat for a lot of other reasons, whether it be boredom or stress. But I know in my clinical practice, I see a ton of emotional eating. And so that really takes us further into, you can't just say, well, I'm going to do better, right? Like I'm going to eat better, when we kind of eat our feelings, right? So talk to me about emotional eating.
Well, again, I don't know if we have time to cover that one either, but we'll try, right?
Yes, we will do our best.
Yeah, we'll do our best. But yes, emotional eating, I've been a dietitian, like you said earlier, for a long time and worked with all the medical conditions that you would think a dietitian would. But one thing that I've encountered consistently throughout my career is emotional eating. And it's something that's really common. And, a lot of times it's really hard to kind of put food in what I would call the right perspective, which is just food is just fuel.
Right.
That's what it is. It's nothing more. It's nothing less. It's just to fuel our body. And I often, talk to my family or kids, and even encourage families to think about your body as like a physical car.
Mm-hmm.
It needs fuel just like your car does. And we need to put good fuel in it, the right amount of fuel in it, and we need to use it. And that's kind of how we should think about our bodies. But that's just not the case. We do live in a very emotional world with a lot of stress and anxiety. And again, that's another story for another show,
right.
But it definitely can translate into our eating and our health behaviors.
It can. And, whenever I'm working with someone, we kind of do a deep dive into all of our areas of health behaviors. And if we feel like that is contributing to how we're eating or what we're eating, then that's what we're going to focus on first, because I can't just tell you, well, don't eat that if you're eating that in response to these emotions that you're having. We have to figure out a different way to manage our emotions so that we're not needing that food for that particular
emotion, right? And so it's, we got to replace it with a different habit. And oftentimes that means we're going to have some, you know, additional mental health treatment to help us deal with stress management, or going to have to start doing more mindfulness or meditation or different things to address that stress or that emotion that is leading us to eat. And patients will often go, well, are you going to give me a list of what I can and can't eat? Not today. I'm not. First of all, there's nothing you can't eat. But second of all, we got foundational work to do before we move into adjusting what we're eating. All right, we do have a caller on the line, so we'll go to Hattiesburg and say, good morning, Bob. How can we help you?
Hey, how y'all doing?
We're great.
Hey, Bob.
All right. Hey, how you doing? All right, this is a question I have.
Okay.
A registered certified nutritionist that was working with an individual that was on like 10, 12 different medications for diabetes. Would y'all take into consideration the required medication that this person's taking when you advise them on what nutritious food they would eat?
Absolutely. I'll let Jessica expound upon that, but that's exactly what a registered dietitian does, is look at the medical conditions and the medications. So take it away, Jessica.
Yes, that's a great question, Bob. But yes, you nailed it, Josie, because that's exactly what a dietitian would do. They would take in all the information, including what is the medical condition, what are the medications, and so forth. And then they would construct an eating plan and help the person decide what is the best approach to eating for them, moving ahead based on all those considerations. For someone with diabetes, especially if it's a severe case of diabetes, a lot of dietitians have extra credentials or extra training around the realm of diabetes. They may be something called a certified diabetes educator. And so, again, you have people in the dietitian world and the nursing world and the medical world in general that have extra training in those areas. So, yes, Bob, to answer your question, a dietitian would consider all of those things and make that a part of their plan moving forward.
All right. That helped you out, Bob?
Yeah, that's wonderful. It would be advisable for people with bad diabetes to get associated with a registered
dietitian. Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Bob.
All right, bye.
Bye. And if you're looking for a dietitian, you can always go to eatright.org. That's the dietetics website, and you can put in your location and it will show you dietitians in your particular area, or you can always ask your regular healthcare provider for a referral to a registered dietitian in your area. But it's, especially with things like diabetes, what a dietitian is going to bring to the table is understanding how those medications work and when they work, especially the different insulins, because we may need to time different snacks around when those insulins are going to start to work, with some of the newer meds for injectables for diabetes that are going to alter our appetite. We got to make sure we're still fueling our body and those kinds of things. So absolutely going to need a dietitian's assistance there if at all possible. Jessica, when we're working with folks, I know that disordered eating is a word that is coming up more and more. And I know you've worked a lot in the past with folks with eating disorders. Is there a difference between eating disorders and disordered eating?
Yes, that's a great question. So disordered eating is almost like the precursor to an eating disorder. And what we often call it in the industry is there's a tipping point. And it's oftentimes not really clear when that tipping point happens, meaning when a person goes from just disordered eating to eating disorder. A lot of times what I see kind of in practice is that an eating disorder really manifests when a person starts to suffer physically from the restriction or binging or whatever their eating disorder is. It's more when it becomes kind of physically affecting them. But I want to stress that it's super important for a person to get treatment, even if they have is just what they would call just disordered eating, because the tipping point can happen really quickly. So both, warrant equal consideration and attention and treatment, before it does become an eating disorder.
Yeah. And before we dive into that a little bit more, we do have a caller on the line, so we will go to Horn Lake and say, good morning, David. How can we help you?
I was looking for some tips to making snacks a little bit healthier. I've been experimenting with taking brownie mixes and mixing canned pumpkin in it and mill flax seeds. I wonder if you could give me some tips that I could maybe take a relatively inexpensive cake mix or brownie mix and doctor it up where it'd be more vitamins and more fiber in it so my grandkids won't be just eating empty sugar calories.
Look at you trying to take care of your grandbabies, too. All right, Jessica, let's talk healthy snacks.
That's a great question, David, and I love what he was saying about a brownie mix and pumpkin puree, I believe what he said.
Yeah.
And so, first of all, commend the creativity. I think that's outstanding. But one thing that, when you said brownie mix, and it made me think of baking, one of the most common things that people do with baking to make it healthier is using something like applesauce or even avocado in place of some of the fat inside of those brownie mixes or whatever it may be inside of their baking goods. And it adds a little bit of extra health pumps, if you want to call it, but it can kind of cut back on some of the added fat that a person may not want. And so that's really what came to mind for me. But using flaxseed, like you said, outstanding. And then obviously, David, one of the things that I would like to stress, too, is let's say that you just want a good old-fashioned brownie.
Yep.
You know what? There's nothing wrong with that. Then it just comes to portion control.
Right.
Again, there's nothing wrong with a brownie. And so just, you know, want to stress that, again, any food is good. Moderation is important. But, yeah, those healthy tweaks that we can make to it are outstanding.
Yep. One of the things that I like to do if I'm going to make a regular dessert, like if I'm just going to just take a regular old brownie mix and mix it up, is make it in a little mini muffin tin. That way they're already portioned for me. And my favorite part of the brownie is like the edge because it's chewy. And so when you cook them in the little mini muffin pan, the whole thing is like the chewy edge. So that's my hack for
that.
Really? I like to do it like that. And then I always think, you know, what does my body need, right? And so it's normally we're needing some healthy fats or some protein or something like that to kind of anchor down that sweet treat. And so I like to drizzle a little bit of melted peanut butter over mine. That way I'm getting a little bit of heart-healthy fats and a little bit of protein on board there in my treat. David, you did great with the pumpkin. We actually did that recipe in our teaching kitchen one time because we're adding fiber, we're adding vitamins and minerals to that. And just like she mentioned, you know, replacing in a regular cake mix, replacing some or all of the oil with like mashed bananas or applesauce is good. Switching out the eggs with something like you're doing the ground flax seeds. I'd mix those with a little bit of water. Usually it's 1 tablespoon of ground flax to 3 tablespoons of water replaces 1 egg. And so you're getting, again, some healthy fats in there and a little bit of extra fiber. So good job.
All right,
thanks, David. And Jessica, one of my favorite snacks is what I like to call apple nachos, which
I love it.
Sliced apples. I leave the peel on mine because I like that extra fiber on the outside, and then drizzled some warmed up melted nut butter on top, and then sprinkle it with some chocolate chips or nuts or shredded coconut or whatever, you know, whatever your favorite topping is, or all three. And one, it slows me down because they're in smaller bites, you know, it's cut up.
Right.
And it's just a lovely, sweet, crisp treat that I like to have. And again, pairing what I really want, some chocolate with what my body needs, some fruit, so that we can have the best of both worlds there. Now, when we're talking, kind of switching gears and going back into disordered eating, how can we tell if we're starting to slide in that direction?
That is a great question, too. And unfortunately, oftentimes it's really hard to detect some of these symptoms early on. A lot of times what I tell, especially parents, if they notice this and maybe they're teenagers or younger adults, one of the things that we notice first is maybe it looks like a person may be trying to diet or try something new in their eating, and it may look like just some basic restricting, or it may start with, and what I mean by restricting is just not wanting to eat as much as usual, or another person may call it dieting. So it may start with some early restricting or skipping meals, things like that. And you may notice some changes before it really becomes concerning. When it becomes concerning is when you see that the person is becoming, you know, hypervigilant about something, like counting their calories, or they seem to become really stressed if they have to eat in certain situations. And kind of that's when a lot of people notice it, is when things start to bring on a lot of anxiety and stress and concern, you know, that kind of almost gets a little more intensified. And then when it becomes the actual eating disorders, when you start to see things like slowed heart rate or extreme weight loss or different physical symptoms that may manifest as a result of some of these eating symptoms that have, you know, have been adopted. Mm-hmm. So did that answer your question?
It did. And, you know, I agree. It's kind of a slippery slope. But, you know, one thing that often concerns me is when people start talking about, is this food compliant on my diet or not?
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh, let's... Let's take a small step back and look at that relationship with that food, because that eating pattern that is making you feel guilt or anxiety around having a food that has nutrients in it is a slippery dive into being so overly concerned with, you know, how clean something is, or how, which I also don't like the word clean eating. That one drives me nuts a little bit too. But I'm like, are the other foods dirty? Like, I don't understand. But
right.
You know, I mean, I largely eat a lot of plants, mostly a plant predominant eater, but I don't stress about that, right? Like, if I go out to eat, I'm going to get a veggie plate, but I'm not going to go, oh, well, I think there's a little bit of cheese on top of that. Now, obviously, if I was allergic to dairy, that would be a different story. But, you know, I'm not going to not eat because I'm worried that maybe that had, you know, an animal product in it. And again, that's completely different if you're choosing, you know, an animal, a plant-based diet for ethical reasons. But just for health, I'm going to stray into being unhealthy if I become too preoccupied with how perfect my plate is. I'm just going to make the best decision and then move on.
That's right.
Yep.
But, you know, with your work that you do as a nurse practitioner as well, oftentimes people get scared into these things. For example, the person goes to the doctor and suddenly their blood sugar's high and they hear the word diabetes. It's quite frightening to a person.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly that person feels like sugar is harmful,
right.
You know, when before it wasn't. So oftentimes, you know, we see people may fall into these, you know, disordered eating patterns of no fault of their own,
right.
And they may have come from a place of being quite frightened. But everything you said, I completely agree with. And
I didn't plant her here to say that. So that's always comforting,
right.
When when we agree on things. You're listening to Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit on MPB Think Radio. I'm Josie Bidwell, joined today by registered dietitian Jessica Fons, and we're talking all about nonsense nutrition. I've been doing so good and messed it up right there on the third segment of this show. Well, you know, A for effort. All right. What prompted me to ask you on the show is you've been sharing some great photos of plates that you've been making for your family on social media, and they're just so real and relatable and not don't look very time consuming or difficult to put together. And I thought, we got to bring this message out to our listeners that we overcomplicate it, and it doesn't have to be. We can nourish our families without sacrificing our our mental health and trying to get those meals on the table.
Absolutely, and you're so right that those pictures that you're referring to, it all started with, I had made, an overnight oatmeal that I thought was delicious, and I just posted it on my Facebook page, and I was kind of overwhelmed by the response of people just saying post more, and just they wanted real life examples. And so it's been really fun to see people's interest, but you're right, you know, we overcomplicate things. And one of my favorite tips, if I can share it now, I often tell people, I call it 3 for 3. It's so simple, and it's the easiest way to think about eating. If you eat 3 meals per day, and you have 3 food groups at each meal, and those 3 food groups being some type of protein, some type of starch, and then some type of fruit or vegetable, if you do 3 for 3 every day, you're more than halfway there to a healthy eating diet.
Mm-hmm.
And so very simple. We can do this for our children, for anyone in our family. And to be quite honest, that same thing applies no matter what health condition that a person may have. And so, yeah, remember, if you remember anything from today that I have said 3 for 3, please take that with you.
Which is not the 4 for 4 at some of the drive-through restaurants.
That's exactly right.
But that, I mean, that's a really kind of good way to break it down. And when you're trying to build a meal, you can just kind of stop and ask yourself, do I have a protein? Do I have a starch? Or do I have a fruit and or veggie? And if not, how can we find that and add it? You know, one thing that I take for granted, and I'm trying to make sure that we do give people the tools that they need to do that, is not everybody understands exactly what a good protein source is. And so kind of go through what are proteins and what are some good, not super expensive ways to get that. Because they can be, proteins can be one of the pricier items on your plate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So when you think of protein, most people, what comes to mind is meat. Mm-hmm. And that's true. Meat generally is our good source of protein that we most often think of. And when we talk about good meat, again, no food's bad, but right. We definitely want to prepare our meat in a way that it's either grilled or it's baked or it's, you know, it's not fried and a lot of extra stuff. And that's what I tell people, even keep your food simple, because just a simple apple is a beautiful piece of, you know, food.
Right.
It doesn't have to be manipulated at all. Well, the same thing with protein, just a simple piece of grilled fish, there's great, or chicken. So most people think of meat, but some other sources of protein are beans. Beans is another really good one, and those are often really low cost. So something mm-hmm. like red beans and rice, well, there you have your protein. We also have nuts and nut butter. So like peanut butter would mm-hmm. be considered a protein. And then we have some of those plant-based sources, things like tofu or hummus, chickpeas, things like that would also be considered a good source of protein.
Yeah. And you don't have to define yourself, right? Some days if you want to have meat, have meat. Some days if you want to have a no meat protein, have a no meat appetizer. You know, that it can be a really lower stress way of trying to implement, you know, more plants into your diet and that type of thing. But I love what you said about keeping it simple. You know, we overcomplicate it in trying to come up with like really creative recipes. But if we take a real look at our plate and we notice, like, man, I haven't had a fruit in days.
Right.
You know.
Just slice an apple and have some peanut butter and there you go.
There you go. Right.
Yeah,
or throw a couple of cuties in your bag and, you know, have those with your lunch at work. It doesn't have to be something really exotic, you know, or really difficult to put together. Let's talk about starches for a second, because, you know, I had a sweet patient this week who has a new diagnosis of diabetes. And well, it was last week. And she's like, well, they told me not to eat any starches. And I died a little on the inside, because we can have starches. But it, again, not all starches are necessarily created equal. And again, no starch is off limits. But if we're trying to control our blood sugar, there are some things we may want to think about in the starch category.
Absolutely. And so what we usually want people to do is have something called complex carbohydrates, or what this is those healthier carbs that people often refer to. So we're talking wheat bread or 100% whole wheat bread instead of white bread. And that's where we come up with the idea of complex carbs. Starches and carbs, this is a word that really confuses people. And without getting too much in the science, starches really refers to what people think of as carbs, mm-hmm. bread, pastas, rice, those sorts of things. Carbs is a more broad word that actually can include things like dairy and fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we refer to starches, we're talking more about the breads that you think of when a person talks about carbohydrates. And just to keep those healthy, again, you know, keep them simple. Try to make them whole wheat, you know, try to make them, you know, without adding a lot of extra stuff to them. And again, just like you mentioned with blood sugar, a lot of it comes down to portion control.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times in the typical American diet, it's not that carbs or starches are bad, but unfortunately in our traditional American diet, we tend to eat too many of those particular foods.
Right.
And so a lot of it just comes down to portion control and just making sure that you don't have too much of that at one time. Again, going back to 3 for 3, it's just one of the foods that you have in combination with other food groups to kind of balance it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what I try, and the question I've tried to start asking folks when they say, can I have this? I'll go, instead of what? Right, you know, so
that's a great way to put it,
if yeah. they say, can I have a potato? I'm going to go, instead of what? Right. Or, you know, can I have white rice? I get asked that one a lot. And I'm like, again, instead of what? Instead of going through the drive-thru and getting, you know, a burger and fries? sure, I'm not going to fight you on a brown rice versus a white rice in the appropriate serving size on a well-balanced plate with veggie and a good protein there. So, you know, we're not setting folks up for success when we kind of vilify certain foods. We've got to make it fit into what we will eat and what we have access to and can afford. And if that's all you have access to, then let's eat. Let's not just not eat. All right, before we go to our next break, we do have a caller on the line. So we'll go and talk with Mikey. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
I just got to throw in something it's helped me a lot, you know, once I discovered it. And that is the use, first of all, increases the liquids in your diet, mm-hmm. which is always a good thing. And there's a great variety, very affordable, particularly if you look for the sales, like you should anyway. Teas, herbal teas, you know, even the caffeinated teas, although, you know, I understand you should go easy on those, and I do my best to, but, you know, anyway, sometimes I do have the caffeinated and then follow up with the decaf for the rest of the, you know.
Yeah.
But you can also mix them half and half. Mm-hmm. I even know one person who was a registered dietitian who told me that, it was my brother's wife, okay, and because he was going, oh, I can drink a whole pot of coffee and then just go right to sleep, and she said, well, don't tell him, but I go ahead and mix the half and half.
She was sneaking it down for him.
But you can do the same sorts of things with teas. And they are really wonderful for adding flavor without adding fat, without adding caffeine, if you don't want that, mm-hmm. if you can't do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like it's water. It's flavored water, and it's affordable, and it's easy. And the easiest method that I know to do it, this is the important thing that I was hoping to get through to, take your smaller water bottles, you know, that you buy, and just stick one of your bags of whatever you think it is you're going to want in there and just leave it.
Let it diffuse.
Overnight. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, because it's going to make its own little swamp in there.
I love that. I love that. I'm never going to look at a tea bag the same way.
A delicious swamp. And my favorite recipe with tea that I found that surprised the heck out of me is green tea with rice.
Oh, look at there.
It doesn't sound all that great, but you see if it surprises you and let me know, okay?
I'll keep you posted. All right, thanks for giving us a call, Mikey. This is Southern Remedy, Healthy and Fit on MPB Think Radio. I'm Josie Bidwell here with Jessica Fons, and we've been talking all about no-nonsense nutrition. And we have been kind of trying to debunk some of the myths out there, but also give you some practical strategies for balanced nutrition. You mentioned 3 for 3 before, so 3 meals a day and then 3 food groups. So I think I know the answer to this question, but is breakfast really important?
Oh, my goodness. This is another great question. So, you know, there's a lot of confusion out there about breakfast, especially right now where intermittent fasting is a really hot topic that people talk about. What I have personally seen through my experience is breakfast sort of kickstarts the day, and it's not so much that the breakfast itself is most important, but it's how it translates through the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes what people find is if they skip breakfast, they tend to feel that they overeat at night or they want to snack at bedtime. And so what it does is if a person eats breakfast, it sort of like kickstarts that regular meal pattern of a breakfast and a lunch and a dinner. So what I always tell people is have something at the beginning of your day, at the end of your day, and then something somewhere in the middle, which for most people translates into a normal breakfast, lunch, and dinner that people think about. So.
Right.
Yeah, good question.
And a lot of people that I work with, they're like, well, I'm just not, you know, I haven't eaten breakfast in years. And so I'm just, you know, I'm not hungry in the morning. And they don't eat till, you know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then just like you said, we overconsume at that point in time and continue to kind of munch and snack into the evening times. And I think it's important that we realize, like, if we have kind of chronically done that, our body's just used to that. And so it may not be that you actually aren't hungry. It's just we're not really perceiving those hunger cues earlier in the day. And so starting to have a little something in the morning may kind of reset and wake that up a little bit. The other thing is we tend to pour coffee in the morning hours, and that caffeine can be a little bit of an appetite suppressant. So if we're not feeling hungry, it may be because we're just we're drowning our appetite in some caffeine. All right, we got a couple of minutes left in the show, and we got a couple callers on the line. So let's go say hello, Jan. How can we help you?
Yes, I'm diabetic, and I would like a quick take on your opinion of the Yukon potato, because I've heard in several places that it has less carbs than the regular potato.
All right. I know my thoughts on it. Jessica, what are your thoughts?
So the Yukon potatoes that you asked about having more carbs.
Or less carb.
Or less carbs, that's what you said. Okay. I'm writing this down. So that's a great question. You know, Jan, we often hear a lot of confusion about something called about carrots, too. A lot of people feel like carrots, is it a sugar? Is it a vegetable? Is it a carb? What is it? But oftentimes when we're referring to things like this, it has more to do with the glycemic index than it actually does the amount of carbohydrates in it. And what that means is it's just how quickly the carbs or the sugar goes into the system. And so to me, and again, I'd love to hear, Josie, what your take on this is, but to me, pretty much all carbs are created equal. I don't think there's any difference much between a Yukon potato versus like a russet potato or any other ones. And so I kind of see them all as equal, and it's more about portion size and what we actually put into the potatoes, like mashed potatoes. Are we putting butter and milk and, you know, what else are we putting into there? But when it comes to glycemic index, yes, some do kind of absorb and go into the system faster. And that may be more in reference to that question that gives you an answer to it. So I don't know if I answered the question. So, Josie, please jump in and help.
So I think the same way. Like, we're talking maybe a few grams of carbohydrate difference, you know, nothing that I would call really clinically significant between a Yukon Gold or a russet or a baby red or even, you know, even sweet potato. So if we continue to think of it in one kind of carb or starchy choice per meal and kind of keeping it on that quarter of the plate, I think it is overcomplicating it when we try and pick the best potato. Pick the potato that you can afford and that you like. Now, what I do like about Yukon Golds is they tend to have a more buttery flavor. So I find that you need to add less butter to them to make them taste good. So they are my preference for mashed potatoes just for that reason, so that we don't have to add a whole bunch of fat to it to get it to taste lovely. All right, I hope that helps you out. I hope that helped you, Jan. All right, quickly, we're going to try and get in this last call from Libby. What can we help you with?
Yes, I wanted to know how many snacks we should have per day.
Wonderful. All right, Jessica, how many snacks should we get?
This is a great question, and this completely depends on the person. So I tell people this, and I'll try. I know I'll have to make this quick.
Yes.
Think of your three meals per day as your pillars. They do not need to change. We need to have those three pillars in place, a breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Snacks, the purpose of a snack is to support the meal, meaning they're spaced in between as needed. So a person who's very active and they find that they're excessively hungry at the next meal, then yes, they may need anywhere from 1 to 3 snacks per day. But if a person comes to their next meal and they find that they're not really that hungry at all and their hunger scale is saying, is it really time to eat already? Well, that person may need no snacks at all. So this is where hunger and being aware of what your body's telling you and your activity level becomes super important. And it really varies person to person depending on the number of snacks.
Yep. I've got very little to add there. I don't want to force people to eat a snack if they're not hungry during that time in between meals. But I do want people to stop and listen to their bodies and go, am I hungry? And if I don't have a little something now, am I going to just completely demolish and overeat at the next meal? And if so, then think about what you can build. I usually recommend a protein and a carbohydrate for snacks. So maybe a yogurt and a piece of fruit, something like that, to kind of tide you over to that next mealtime. Thank you so much for that call, and thanks to all our callers today. It's been a great show, but most importantly, thanks to Jessica Fons, registered dietitian, for joining me today. You've been listening to Southern Remedy Healthy and Fit, which is a production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting Think Radio, and is funded in part by a grant from the University of Mississippi Medical Center. Healthy and Fit is produced by the wonderful Kevin Farrell. Make sure you tune in every weekday at 11 for the full Southern Remedy lineup, and never miss an episode by downloading the podcast on your favorite podcasting app.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.